The international aid agencies say Palestinians in occupied territories are facing a deepening humanitarian crisis. This as they live under the continuous risk of Israeli attacks. So why is their situation worsening, and what is the international response? This is Inside Story. Hello there and welcome to the programme. I'm Nick Clark. Living under Israeli occupation and the constant risk of attack is a reality of daily life of Palestinians in their homeland. But even that grim existence is becoming harsher, with the far-right Israeli government in power and funding cuts for international aid agencies and organisations. We'll be discussing what this means in just a few moments with our guests. But first, Sarah Harit reports on the situation that Palestinians face.
Life has been hard for Palestinians living under Israeli occupation, and now it's going to get harder. Israel's far-right government is implementing policies that restrict Palestinians even further, with more land being taken from them in occupied West Bank. This year alone, more than 150 Palestinians have been killed. Violence against them is at its highest in decades. And now, a massive shortfall in international aid. And that means the provisions of basic food, water, sanitation and even education is under threat. The United Nations Refugee Agency of Palestinians has made an urgent appeal.
Starting 2023, with a $75 million US dollars debt carried over from the last year, is a stark reminder of the precarious state UNRWA finds itself in. UNRWA will run out of money by September, unless we disperse immediate funds.
Nearly 6 million Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, Gaza Strip, and Palestinian refugees in Syria, Lebanon and Jordan depend on aid. Palestinians are also facing the highest increase in food prices in 6 years, with unemployment at an all-time high, nearly 50% in the Gaza Strip. Intense Israeli airstrikes last month and severe restrictions on Palestinians by land and sea have caused significant financial and humanitarian losses in Gaza. Ahmed Aboudan used to run a textile factory, but because of the blockade, he's reduced operations and even the number of staff that he employs.
In the past, this factory had 300 workers. We used to export to Israel and the rest of the world, but because of the restrictions and violence, it is barely running now.
The World Food Programme has also appealed for help. 200,000 Palestinians will no longer receive food assistance because of severe funding shortages. And by August, it will be forced to completely suspend all operations in the occupied West Bank and Gaza if no international aid is received. Sarah Khairat, Al Jazeera, Inside Story.
Well, let's take a closer look at the situation. According to the World Food Programme, 35% of Palestinians living in the occupied West Bank and Gaza have difficulty getting enough food. That's around 1.84 million people. Women are particularly hard hit. In the Gaza Strip, 63% of households headed by females are affected. The WFP says funding shortages also mean about 60% of those it helps in the occupied Palestinian territories are not getting the assistance with food that the agency normally provides them. According to the World Bank, just under 60% of people in Gaza live in poverty. All right, let's take this on. For more, I am joined by our guests, all in Gaza. First up, Maha Husseini, who's an award-winning journalist and strategy director at Euromed Human Rights Monitor. Osama Abdel Jabba is a Palestine country director for the World Food Programme, the WFP. And we have Nigella Shawa, who's an aid worker and a mother of two children, a long-term resident of Gaza. And she and her family have survived several Israeli raids on the city. A warm welcome to all of you. And Nadja, I'd like to start with you, if I may. As I say, you're a mum and a humanitarian worker. You see it from all sides. We have a situation now where food prices are up 20%. Money coming in is down radically. And all the time you're living under the Israeli blockade and ongoing attacks. Describe for us, if you will, what it's like trying to run a family as a resident of Gaza what daily life is like.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me. Well, honestly, it's a constant state of anxiety at best for those who can afford daily living and still can survive. The problem is that with the majority of the population around us and the community around me continue to suffer from this kind of fluctuation in everything. There's everyday uncertainty and anxiety in how life can be lived, basically, by the day, from like power cuts to water quality issues, from inability to move and travel and expect just another military attack against the Strip and continue to suffer again and again. Now, in terms of the current situation, I think what is more dangerous is that the world doesn't hear it, because it can hardly make news. The very silent kind of suffering of people on the ground due to the difficulty of the economic situation simply makes life extremely, extremely hard for the entire population.
Okay. Maha Husseini, and this is a story of challenge, of difficulty, not just in Gaza, but across the Palestinian territory.
Yeah, actually, it's not only in Gaza, but maybe Gaza is the most impacted by this crisis in general, because this month, you know, we are entering the 18th year of Israel's suffocating blockade of this Strip. And anyone could imagine the impact 17 years of closure and tight restrictions can have on the lives of over 2 million residents. We're already actually 3 years ahead of the year in which the UN said life would be unlivable in Gaza. And during the years of the occupation, whether in the West Bank or the Gaza Strip, and especially the years of the blockade and after the multiple major Israeli military attacks that have devastated the Strip's infrastructure, tens of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza have actually lost their jobs, either because of the closure that rendered import and export extremely difficult for hundreds of businesses that shut down as a result, or because of Israel's targeting of businesses during military attacks. We're actually talking about the vast majority of people and the vast majority of factories, about 80% of factories that have shut down since the imposition of the Israeli blockade. Of course, as a result, we're witnessing a surging unemployment and food insecurity rates that are considered among the highest in the world. For instance, in Gaza, the unemployment rate is double that of the West Bank, and it has risen around from 23% before the imposition of the blockade in 2005 to 47% actually by the end of 2022. Also, poverty has risen sharply due to the Israeli restrictions, from 40% in 2005 to over 61% in 2022. Mm-hmm. This surge of
indeed, Maha, we'll explore this further. I mean, all the statistics, what you're saying is that they're all going in the wrong direction, aren't you? I'll come back to you in a second. But if we can come to you, Sama, from the World Food Programme. What are the bare facts from your point of view? To what degree is aid having to be cut, and what impact is that having?
Thank you, Nick. I think the starting with the impact, last week, actually, I was in Gaza and I visited some families together with Al Jazeera colleagues. The situation is very dire, like Najla and Maha were saying. We're seeing food insecurity is already high. 1.8 million people in both West Bank and Gaza are in need of food assistance. We are looking at a fiscal crisis that is affecting all different stakeholders, difficulties in paying salaries, the PA, but also the de facto in Gaza. We're seeing difficulties in other programs that are affecting UN and in NGOs. So we're looking at a situation that is desperate. Families are having difficulties on putting food on the table. And at the same time, many of them are coming to us saying, we don't need humanitarian assistance. We just want you to support us with economic opportunities. employment opportunities, and we will be able to take care of ourselves. So we are looking at the way we're supporting those vulnerable families, that it's time-bound in the sense that they want to do more, they can do more, they're highly educated, there's a huge percentage of youth who really wants to do and deliver, and until that moment where they are able to secure funding for themselves and their families, we will be giving them hope. And unfortunately, the funding situation for us has been difficult for quite some time, and we've been living on a month by month to make sure that those vulnerable families are not falling even further into food insecurity levels.
You mentioned youth. I do wonder about the children. Najla, how is it for your children? Tell us how old they are and how they're coping with all of this.
Yeah, my children are 9 and 6 years old, and unfortunately, I had to face a whole new challenge since the beginning of their conscious or awareness to the difficulties of Gaza. Despite how privileged we are as a family, however, living in Gaza is in constant stress of facing Israeli raids. A few weeks ago. And I think that it just puts parents at extreme pressure on daily basis to try and bring any trust with your children of a better future or even a better tomorrow, like literally tomorrow. So it is an extremely challenging environment with very difficult questions, like how do you raise a child in an environment where you sleep while expect that the glass nearby you to simply break on top of you. I mean, this kind of things are part of our daily conversations with me and my children. And I think the majority of children, I mean, in the Gaza Strip have in no way deserve to continue to live this way, especially because like what Samer was saying, people here want to work, want to earn a living, they want the opportunity, and they seek it every single day. And why would people work, I mean, for like 12 hours or more for $2 in Gaza? I mean, you cannot believe the level of desperation in terms of wanting to receive education, wanting to work, just anything to earn a living. And I think this all brings us back to, I mean, this highly concerning situation of like the World Food Program or other aid programs. Why do we have this problem? Is that simply because the political issues have never been resolved and have never been looked at? And I think the world knows enough about the situation and the injustice that this population continues to see generation after the other. So yes, I do wonder, what do I tell my children when they never faced, they never lived a day of full having power supply? Issues like that, while not being able to travel, for example. So, I mean, all these issues continue to really make our life completely uncertain and Indeed. Full of anxiety.
Samer, let's try and answer that question. Why has it got to this stage? The political thing is critical, obviously, the critical point of view, but what else is happening here? There's a global food crisis going on. There's living expenses around the world are rocketing. Is that what it's about? Why have your funds plummeted in the way they have to the extent that you need $51 million just to the end of the year?
That's correct. So it's been difficult since last year, honestly. We've been living on a month-by-month basis. Many of the donors have stepped up last minute to avoid budget cuts. But unfortunately, we had to get to this point where we needed to announce cuts to beneficiaries simply because we don't have enough resources that will allow us to continue. And we needed to prioritize the remaining funding to make sure that we're able to reach the most in need, even at those difficult times. So the situation has been bad. I think the global prices have actually made a major impact on our operations. But also, if you go to the market, the prices have been soaring. I think earlier Maha mentioned 20% increase in commodities, the price of commodities. Since almost a year, we've been monitoring more than 40 different food commodities and issuing market monitoring reports. And unfortunately, we don't see prices going down. We are seeing more people depending on coping strategies even to cover cover some of their basic needs.
What about money coming into your coffers? That's dwindled too. People just aren't donating as much. Is that right?
So we've received less than what we received last year so far, and we've been working with all different partners to make sure that we are actually mobilizing some of the funding that is needed.
Because we're hearing similar stories about the Rohingya in Myanmar, aren't we? It's the fact that you had to cut down daily rations there too. It's a similar story to Gaza.
It's unfortunately, with the lack of political solutions in many of the crises, we will see more needs of food insecurity that started actually during COVID and continuing with the situations and political situations around the globe.
So, Maha, you touched on the international side of things. How do you feel deserted by the international community?
Well, actually, I guess Palestinians are feeling that they are being failed. They are unfortunately gradually losing means of survival. And the future actually will see even more suffocating humanitarian crisis as long as the international community allows Israel to continue with its abuses and violations against Palestinians. And actually, the problem is much more profound than the economic or poverty crisis for Palestinians. Such crises are now determining the future and destiny of Palestinians. In the past, for example, Palestinians, with the support of the international community, where their main concern was to live freely in dignity and to end the illegal occupation. But today, their main and daily concern, the concern for the vast majority of the families, is how to merely secure food and stay alive, as Samir has said. So many of them only wait for the monthly humanitarian aid provided by the international organization, which is actually the only aid or support provided by the international community to Palestinians. And this is unfortunately a normal result of the strategy of starving Palestinians Israel has been adopting for the past years. Because a hungry person cannot think of dignity or freedom unless he secures his food. It is actually as simple as that. And the thing is that the international community is actually allowing Israel to go further than that, which is Israel is taking advantage of the fact that Palestinians are actually starving and also extorting Palestinians, especially those in the Gaza Strip, which is a very more dangerous fact. A few months ago, for example, or a few years ago, for example, following the Israeli military attack on Gaza in 2021, the Israeli authorities allowed tens of thousands of Palestinians from Gaza to be employed doing low-skilled jobs in Israel for the first time. And of course, hundreds of thousands have applied to get permits to work. But since then, Euromed Monitor documented several cases in which these workers have been extorted, interrogated by the Israeli intelligence at the Erez border, and forced to give sensitive information about their neighbors, for example, and relatives, etc. Those, of course, those who refused to give information were simply denied work permits and were not allowed into Israel and the occupied territories. This is deeply saddening.
Let me just take it on. Thanks for that, Maha. I just want to bring Nigella back in. As far as the international community is concerned, are you feeling that things have changed for the worse since the Trump presidency? And, you know, we saw the normalization of relations with various countries, and that has kind of engendered this lack of care from the international community?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the answer is yes. Things have got worse in terms of the politics from the region around us. That's what we, unfortunately, Palestinians have been feeling more and more. The failing exactly from some Arab countries. However, the other more important issue is that what brought us to this place to begin with. I mean, it was the international community that supported Israel all the way, or parts, major parts of the international community that is actually allowing this to happen. So maybe in one hand there is very generous support and good assistance to the Palestinian people. However, on the other hand, there is no enough, serious act or move towards Israeli policies to actually stop all this to begin with. And I think this comes from the simple lack of recognition that we are equal in this equation. And this continues to be the case. We know that populations across the globe, there's a lot of solidarity with Palestinians. We see that and we love that. However, we know when it comes to real politics and real decisions, it doesn't work this way. So in a way, humanitarian assistance is very much needed at this point. When I think about the World Food Programme and other programmes, especially this one, I mean, it is a major safety net programme for people. This is what keeps people really going, I mean, day by day, having food, I mean, some basic food security, and everyone knows that it's hardly enough. However, also silencing Palestinians with just a bit of aid and not a proper support in the general policy environment will not help. And we know that this will continue to be costly for everyone, for the international community, for Palestinians, and for humanity. And it will continue to be like this, like many other crises probably in the world, but more apparently here, where nobody can speak to Israel. I mean, nobody can say no to Israel. That's really the problem. Nobody sees that, or maybe many do see that on a daily basis there are violations against Palestinians in the Gaza and in the West Bank increasingly. And this is not stopping. So this is also something that I think needs to simply stay on the news. And we hope that not the next time we are on the news, it's a military operation, or maybe an announcement or a further report that says Palestinians are have deteriorating humanitarian crisis with increased food insecurity.
Indeed, it's certainly negative news, isn't it, that we hear most of the time. Sama, you're the Palestine country director for the World Food Programme. I would just wonder, from from your heart, from a personal perspective, now you're having to cut this safety net for so many hundreds of thousands of Palestinians. How does it make you feel that you have to tell them this news, that you have to oversee these cuts?
Thanks, Nick. It's a difficult question. And I have to say that when we announced that we had to cut 200,000 people out of assistance in June unless funding comes, it wasn't an easy decision. We went to the last moment to make sure that we did not keep a door that we did not knock. We're working still tirelessly with all different stakeholders to see if we're able to basically revert this decision. If funding comes tomorrow, I'll be able to revert that decision. So, and having those families on the back of our mind and head and looking at them, and my team is on the ground visiting some of those families. We're receiving, in the last 2 weeks, around 12,000 calls to our whole call center, and we're dealing with every call personally. With passion, because we understand how difficult this decision is for many families. Like you said, it's a lifeline support to them. As a humanitarian support, the electronic vouchers that we give is allowing people a dignified way of assistance that they can go to contracted shops and buy the food items that they need. But at the same time, it's also supporting local economies. The 300-plus shops that we contract in West Bank and Gaza are supporting value chains, local dairy production, job creation across the value chain, and the impact is huge on this economy from a development perspective and job creation perspective. So it's not an easy decision for us. And that is one of the things that drives us to really continue. And I thank Al Jazeera for really covering this, because together we will be able to hopefully to revert and be able to secure funding.
Yeah, Maha, just this, the hope for the future and where you find it. I was reading that every year something like 12,000 to 15,000 university graduates come through, and of course they just end up unemployed. What can one even say to try and give them some kind of hope for a decent future?
Actually, they are very well aware that every year the situation is worse than the year before. Actually, the long years of this blockade have rendered Palestinians, including youth and graduates, unable to cope with the severe restrictions and continuous military attacks every 1 or 2 years. They are unable to cope with this, as the international aid organizations are also facing more restrictions affecting their funds and also operations and the in the on the ground. So I guess that as long as this continues, as long as these restrictions continue, I guess that Palestinians are well aware that they are unable to actually further cope with the situation, and they are feeling that the international community is once again failing them and also contributing to making them unable to secure their own sources of livelihoods. As Samer said, Palestinians, and especially graduates, the tens of thousands of graduates that are graduating every year, are able actually to secure a source of livelihoods. But all they need is to protect this source of livelihoods, as Israel is actually targeting the main sources of livelihoods, especially in the Gaza Strip, including farming and fisher and fishing, which are the two main sources of income for Palestinians in Gaza.
Najla, you talked about your kids, your children, and how you have this difficult conversation, which will get harder, I guess, as they get older and understand more about what's going on. But what do you say when, the city's under bombardment and they can hear the noise of that, and you're thinking about their future? What can you say to them to try and give them hope?
I'll tell you, it's a very good question, and it continues to be a very hard conversation. Now, I think having to explain just enough so that they can make sense, if you can make sense of such events, especially when you have questions like, why here, why us, and all these questions. The issue is that I think we have a lot to explain, is that there is history to this land and there is a history to this injustice. And by trying to be, I don't want to use the word resilient, but patient, and work on a better future and have a say in our future. That's the important thing. That's what I'm trying to raise my kids to be, is that Palestinians should not be seen as victims, should be leading their lives. And I think the new generation is probably going to teach this again and bring some hope for a better tomorrow, although it is extremely, extremely hard. But I guess we have no other choice but to give this hope and nourish such determination, is that this is where we are and this is what we are going to be working on. Is simply to be here and get education and seek good skill development, have a strong understanding of things, and just simply grow in this world or in this part of this world as much as possible, and be good around.
Thank you so much to all our guests for speaking to us here at Al Jazeera. Do appreciate it. Maha Husseini, Sama Abdul-Jabbar and Najla Shawa. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the programme again at any time by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, just go to our Facebook page. That is facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can, of course, just join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Nick Clark, and the whole team here, it is goodbye for now.